Sports Day, thanks to Kia. Kia EV6 and Sportage, Cars of the Year. And Toolkit Depot, gear up for winter at Toolkit Depot.
Welcome to Sports Day, 7 after 6, 133-882 is our number. Who's fired up and wants to have their say tonight? So if you want to have a dig, dial before you dig the first essential step. I'm looking across at my co-host here, Mark Reddings. Plenty of news headlines thanks to Polaris. Polaris, Australia's number one selling side-by-side brand. Let's get into it.
Good evening, Carl, and great to be with you and our listeners. 133-882. We're still blowing over the Patrick Cripps decision at the tribunal. That was last week, but we're still having a discussion because we saw today a case go from the match review officer who couldn't come to a conclusion, Michael Christian, who I've got a lot of respect for and a terrific fellow, but for him to hand the Zane Cordy case straight to the tribunal without any reference as to what it falls under, and as it turns out, rough conduct. And if Cordy, and he was obviously cleared, we've heard that with John Nicholls and found that out a little while ago, if he was suspended, that would have been, I guess, the end of any sort of semblance of tribunal understanding, any thoughts that football fans could get a grip of where we're heading with this game, because a hip and shoulder, a bump which went shoulder to shoulder, ended up with concussion. But thankfully, we had common sense prevail.
Well, and this is the area that people are confused by. This is why we've now got the grey area, because previously we've seen bumps dished out and players have been suspended. Now, I can understand why Michael Christian didn't want to send a penalty the way of Cordy, which he could have. He could have essentially either fined him or classified it.
Or cleared him.
But he chose to send it to the tribunal for their determination. So he decided that, well, hang on a minute, maybe I'm now getting a little bit confused, and under the parameters and guidelines in which he can work, he took that liberty to send it to the tribunal tonight. Now, from what we have all seen, it was, as you said, a shoulder-to-shoulder bump. But the outcome was that he concussed another player. Now, it goes back to the same old argument I put up for Paddy Cripps last week. Paddy Cripps initially didn't go in there to bump. He went in to contest the ball. He turned out bumping because he turned to protect and he bumped Archie high. And Archie's going to miss another week. He's going to miss this week,
so,
we found out.
So 2 weeks.
So he's going to miss 2 weeks.
Wow.
The thing is that Tanner Broome, who's a much smaller opponent, he basically cannons into the turf and the grass knocked him out. Now, I could go back to a front-on contact that I did to Stephen Silvani at Subiaco Oval, where I ran into him front-on. But I never hit him in the head. But the force of me running into him front on, he hit his head on the grass, knocked himself out on the grass, right? That's what I always say. I got 3 weeks. That was in 1988. Now, these guys that have gotten away with these last couple of cases, I'm not so sure, and I already have heard the rhetoric come out of the AFL on the back of what Gillon McLachlan has said, that they are now considering making some changes. What sort of changes can they make? If they don't want any contact in the game at all, then they've got to make some significant change, because we are going to continue, unfortunately, to see guys injured, have head injuries, because we are playing an unpredictable contact sport with an oval ball.
Don't disagree. Again, the Patrick Cripps one is the one that will be referred to for a long time moving forward. I think because it wasn't a marking contest, he left the ground. His intention as he was launching himself may have been for the footy, but when he realised he couldn't get there, in my opinion, he turned his body, which in turn resulted in a bump to Archie. He was concussed. He's missing 2 weeks of footy. 2 weeks of footy. Patrick Cripps, zero. To me, there's the confusion there. Right there is where is the tribunal heading. And, of course, going to an appeal set up, look, and the legal side of it now, Carl, what, an hour and 45 presentation by the Carlton Silk? I mean, that shows you that we are, if that's where future hearings are going, then you know, footy tribunals are in trouble.
Yeah, see, look, the one, and the reason why I'll keep on arguing the Paddy Cripps case is that that was not an out-and-out bump, like what we've seen take place with this one, with Cordy.
Different situation, totally different.
And like we saw with Brad Crouch, who did cop a week and has accepted it, that was a bump. And so you've got to be able to, when you jump in the air, you've also got to, okay, well, I'm going to go for the footy, but I can't make it all of a sudden. And you've got this split second to make your mind up. But then you've also got to be able to protect yourself. Otherwise, if you just go front on, cannoning in, like, when we've seen, how often do we call it courageous? Look, Revolt and Brown, there'd be a couple of those big charging back into contests where they just catapult themselves into the contest, and sometimes they get cleaned up, but and we call it courageous.
And look, I'm not, our discussion, our debate here, it's pretty normal because, look, I even asked, I'm going to throw him under the bus a bit here, Dean Margetts, today or yesterday about this, the Patrick Cripps incident, and he was surprised that he got off. Other players might say, perfect, he should get off. There was no intent, move on. That is where we've got the concerning position where the tribunal and fans aren't quite sure exactly where one case is going to another.
Okay. Now, I don't know how you feel, but I don't feel too good in the stomach about what has transpired again today, because if we do reflect back to that Patrick Cripps case again, if Carlton had have lost, that would have been $10,000 on the initial appeal, and then or the initial challenge of the match review panel officer taking it to the tribunal, losing, that was 10 grand. It would have cost him another 5 grand for the appeal. That would have been $15,000 that would have been then not been able to spend in the soft cap. Now, tonight we've had the AFL, after their COVID compliance audit, they've handed out some sanctions. And the hardest hit is the Sydney Football Club. They've been hit with a $100,000 fine. But $50,000 of that has to be included in either the 2022, which is this year, or 2023 soft cap. So it's okay if they haven't spent some money this year and they've got some money left over. I don't know how many clubs would have, given the thin numbers that have been in there. This extends to Collingwood, have been fined 50 grand, so 25,000 of that has to be included in this year's or next year's soft cap. Richmond, $25,000, of which half, 12.5, has to be included. I mean, mate, that's essentially 50 grand. That's a person being employed.
Yeah, well, it's certainly a fair portion of someone's wage in the footy department, for instance, isn't it? I mean, you know, whether they're 150 or 200 or less than that, it's, yeah, I tend to agree with you on that one. The soft cap and where that money, that fine comes from, it's the AFL being, I think, a little disingenuous with how it's putting pressure on clubs. And as I say, you're right, this is an employee of a football club who's having to pay the price, in essence. If those fines are strong enough, people can lose their jobs because the soft cap is affected to that degree.
Before we bring you right up to date with the latest at the Essendon Football Club, their board have met again today. Let's go to Annie, who wants to be first, from Melville. G'day, Annie.
Hey, how you going?
Good, good.
I just have got two really frustrating points that I actually want to vent about. The first one is the Dockers player, Lobb. He is so frustrating, the way he's playing. He kind of never knows where he is. He's guarding a player and then he growls at the other players if they don't kick to him. He can't take overhead marks. I know he was injured last week, but everyone was talking about how great Barras played. But of course he did, because he had no real opposition in Lobb. Anyway, that's my first point. The second point is, please, somebody needs to get rid of Dermot Brereton, who's commentating. He drives me insane listening to him. You can listen to the over east, the Melbourne players, even the Sydney the game. The commentators were fantastic. I'm not sure who they were, but over here, we have to listen to Dermot Brereton talk about his history in football and past lives and what everybody's doing and how they should take the ball. And he's not actually commentating on the game. It just drives me crazy.
Well, how about turning them down, Annie, and turning Skeet and I up? And we will we'll give it a crack, because we try to sync it up with the telly these days as good as we can anyway. So we do have technically that ability to be able to get as close as we can. Sometimes, though, on that live feed, we're a little bit ahead. But when we're calling on the other times from the studio, Skeet, it's pretty much like for like, not too far away now.
And you've got Luke McFarlane, Glenn Jakovich, Will Schofield, Lee Spur, our expert commentary. I think that's where she's heading with regards to that side of it. Rory Lobb, it's interesting, isn't he? Because he is one of those players. There's always one at a football club that gets a whack. And at the West Coast Eagles this year, it was Jack Darling early on. Going back in time, it used to be Fraser Gehrig at the West Coast Eagles. There's always a player that cops a Trent Crowe at Fremantle. It's been a litany of players that have always been the whipping boys. Look, I understand Annie's frustration here, because prior to the Derby, It was star factor against Lobb, wasn't it? Kicked four goals, absolutely was on top of his game against the Western Bulldogs, and really, his value went through the roof. A week later, as we know, it was from chocolates to board lollies, seven possessions, of course suffered the injury, but he looked mentally beaten well before that, didn't he? Tom Barras had his measure. He looked as if he had Lobb just where he wanted him, and Roy didn't look, at least from where we sat, didn't look as if he was able to find a way to impose himself on the game. Now, whether that was a mental side of it or whether physically he's still struggling, I'm not sure, but that was one that would have frustrated Coach Justin Long, but also Docker supporters as well.
Yeah, and yeah, it's the quality of your opposition, though. I mean, Adam Simpson has advocated for Tom Barras, who will win the Eagles' fairest and best, to be in the All-Australian team, and I reckon he probably should be. I mean, on the back of his performances, the influence that he's had on key forwards, I mean, no one from the Western Bulldogs is able to get to Rory Lobb's level, and that's why he was should have kicked six goals. He kicked 4-2, but he probably should have kicked six. Let's go to Darren in Lansdale. G'day.
Hi, Darren.
Hey, guys.
Yeah, we got you, mate.
Just wondering, with these COVID sanctions, do we know what they did wrong? Because I'm wondering if it involves players playing when they shouldn't do because of testing, then a $100,000 fine for a team like Sydney who could finish second is a joke when you look at what it did early in the season to teams like the Eagles.
So I'll let you know that this is what they identified. So a series of non-compliance issues with some clubs. And so it essentially was around not undertaking rapid antigen tests within the period prescribed by the protocols and or not uploading an image or a photograph of a prescribed RAT test within the period prescribed by the protocols and or uploading an image taken of a previous RAT undertaken by that or another person. Now, there were five clubs with various levels of compliance, but the determination on the level of sanctions by the AFL took into account, amongst other things, the number of instances of non-compliance, the period of time over which the non-compliance arose, previous breaches of COVID-19 protocols, so going back into 2020 and 21. So Sydney must have been some repeat offenders here, as well as mitigating factors such as technical issues, timing of testing, uploading windows, and prioritisation of pre-game clearance tests and prioritisation of vigilant viral symptom detection and management. But that was the outcome. So essentially, I would suggest that Sydney had multiple breaches over the last couple of years, and the AFL on the back of this audit have said, well, nah, that's not good enough, and I've slapped him with a $100,000 fine.
Yep, and as you went through quite thoroughly there, Carl, the Sydney Swans, and look, I think Darren's point is very valid, and we do know that some players, not saying it's Sydney, but some players, some of the tests, the photos that were taken were not matching up to what they should have. So there's a bit of cheeky skullduggery going on there in some quarters. So not pointing the finger at Sydney on this front, but there was certainly a case, read, where players weren't living up to their role in the testing procedure. Anyway, good call, Darren.
Thank you, Darren. Steve from East Vic Park didn't want to go to air. He says the recent findings confuse him more around Tim Kelly's suspension. And I
agree.
Reckon that will continue to be the case. It's 20 past six.
Sports Day, thanks to Kia. Kia EV6 and Sportage, cars of the year. And Toolkit Depot, gear up for winter at Toolkit Depot.
Well, it's Dig Night. Don't dig yourself into a whole lodge of free. Dial before your dig inquiry. What's hot for you? Thanks to the Data Nut Butchering Company's Valley Spring Lamb, available at WA's best restaurants, hotels and cafes. Well, what we do know is that Essendon's board again convened a meeting today to discuss the Alistair Clarkson scenario. Now, there's a lot of power brokers there who want a change to be made. And so that is now being seriously considered. Alistair Clarkson, we believe, has shown interest in the job, so much so that the five-year deal that had been tabled by North Melbourne, who wanted a soft, or said they had a soft deadline of tomorrow. So they essentially wanted to know tomorrow as to whether he was going to accept that five-year deal or not. Well, Clarko's camp have extended that deadline today to consider the opportunity at Essendon. He is definitely not going to GWS. That's not going to happen. Adam Uzay looks like he's now the front runner for that. His presentation was very impressive, and Melbourne have already said that he will continue to work with us until we are out of finals. So that's the statement by the Melbourne Football Club today as we head to Jerry in Westminster. G'day, Jerry.
Yeah, good day, gentlemen. How you doing?
We will.
Listen, I have to agree, Tom Barrass is absolutely in scintillating form at the moment and hopefully will get an All-Australian selection. He deserves it. His form's magnificent. But there are times, I have noticed, there are times when he tries to mark everything. And I think that can be a bit of a downfall for him. And as with when McGovern plays and Barrass both play, they are very good at intercepting and taking marks. They're good overhead. If a good opposition coach and players don't have to be rocket scientists, instead of the forwards going for the mark, all they've got to do is spoil Barrass or McGovern when they go for that mark, because most of the time they're trying to mark everything. You spoil and hope that your forward crummers will pick up the spoils and get the goals that way. If the forward player can't outmark Barrass or McGovern, whatever the case, that's the way I'd play it and instruct it if I was coaching. But then again, that's why I'm sitting here and the coaches are getting $600,000 a year in their box.
Yeah.
You know what I'm trying to say. Anyway.
I do, Jerry. But yeah. I'm more opposed to that style. I think what Adam Simpson has done and what even say Simon Goodwin does with the Melbourne defenders, back yourself, take the mark. If you're good overhead, that's a strength you should use, as opposed to, I mean, let's go back to the days of the Stephen Silvani. You talked about him, and so adept at just punching the ball defensively, which is fine. But I think when you've got the ability overhead that McGovern has and also Tom Barrass, you are entitled to back yourself more often than not. Now, quite often, they are obliged to do that, and they come out up with the footy. There are times when they don't, for obvious reasons, because you can't mark everything that comes your way. But I think the coaches back them to do that, and I would like to see them continue in that vein. There are some that were more comfortable, say Harry Edwards, still early in his career, although he's handy overhead, would be preferable just to see the ball over. Alex Pearce is very comfortable just with the fist on the footy. But I think with Tom Barrass, he is so exceptional that I would continue allowing him to play his natural game.
But there's two different scenarios that we're talking about here. I mean, when Barrass is being led to the ball, right, on a lead from an opponent, he punches all the time. He'll try and spoil the contest because normally he's behind. It's when they kick in the high ball that's coming in and he's off his player that he goes for. So we're talking about, and that's the same as McGovern, they're already in position in their zone. Generally, they don't have anyone on them for most of the time. And you know it's a long ball coming in. Well, that's when they'll go for their shots because they're the guys, because they're the best at it. So, but when those guys are on the lead, they don't try and mark the ball most of the time. They'll try and spoil the contest and get it to ground or get it to the sanctuary of the boundary line. So, you know, I think it's horses for courses in this situation.
Exactly. I don't think it's always a case of they try and outmark their opponent. If there's a ball that's falling a little short, that the first option is, hey, we've got to make some ground here, get fist on it and see the ball to ground. So, look, I understand where you're coming from, Jerry, but I think I don't think we'll see any change to the style of Tom Barrass or Jay McGovern moving forward. Jason's in Fremantle. Hi, Jase.
Yeah, good evening, gents. I'm really worried about the game because, unfortunately, I just don't know how the AFL can protect the heads. I mean, when you look at marking contests, it's, you know, a lot of guys get absolutely crunched in that. And if you pull off a mark and you still annihilate the guy in front of you, they say that's a great mark.
Exactly.
The guys that aren't getting hurt, you know, the guys aren't really getting hurt with a little round the necks or the arm over the shoulder. And you look at Riewoldt, you know, that classic mark he took where he's running
SCG. Yeah.
His knee virtually just missed his teammate, didn't it, by inches, which would have killed him.
Well, let me ask, here's another example,
Jase. What would the AFL done with that? It's friendly fire. And Hurd's had his face smashed in with friendly fire as well. So, and Venables maybe as well. So it's sort of really, what I'm saying is I don't know how to fix it because of this going for the ball, especially in a marking contest.
Yeah, well, that's...
And you probably shouldn't be allowed to run backwards because that's just open for a whole lot of problems.
Well, not
you know,
sure.
Run with the ball and be a legend because, as I said, that Riewoldt, his knee was up head high and just missed his teammate.
Yeah, I'm not sure you can legislate against people running back with a flight. I mean, someone like Brett Heady in your day was fearless and we know what danger he put himself in. I think the most recent case that I can recall of a player, and I'm not even sure he took the mark, but Jack Darling v Adelaide, Will Hamill, who was poleaxed in that marking contest outside the goal square. He was concussed and out for the rest of the game purely by Jack attacking the footy and going for a mark in a contest, and Hamill was crunched on the way through. So that's an example, Jason, of what you're trying to say, I guess.
Yeah, that's exactly what I'm trying to say. It's so difficult with the way the game's played on all angles. You know, rugby's front on, and you know what's coming, you know. So it's a really difficult situation for the AFL.
I agree.
I mean, they're not fixing it with little, you know, guys, their legs go out from under them and get free kicks.
Well, I think it's a contact sport. It's a contact sport. And don't we accept that there's unfortunately going to be times where you might get a whack in the head? I mean, is it not logical?
It's starting to get legal. These brain injuries and whatever.
Yeah, I understand, but you don't have to play either. So if you choose to play, the AFL can only try and create as safe a workplace as possible. That's what they can try and do.
That's what they're doing, Carl.
I understand that, but it's not going to work. For all the reasons that Jace has just articulated.
These guys aren't $23 million gridiron players. These guys are only earning a mil a year or $250 to stuff your life up. It's really difficult.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, it's just a difficult game to try and get to the bottom of head injuries. But I think, and you can't take away the marking contest, and you can't take away, like, it was sort of like Cripps even... Cripps is sort of like a marking contest because the ball was in the air, so he left his feet to go for it. And I agree with Cripps getting off, but I just can't get my head around trying to protect the head for the future of this game. You know?
It's unfortunately going to be very difficult.
I don't think, and Jason's point was really good. I don't think the Joel Selwood, Luke Shuey, Jack Ginnivan style of you know, raising the elbow and getting a free kick. I don't think we see regularly or very often at all any head damage done to those players, but it's more the 360 degree element of our game is the issue, and that's not going to change in the short or long term. How the AFL addresses that is one that is causing angst amongst some like yourself with being able to go for a contest, and sometimes you get knocked out. That's just life. Others say, well, if you leave the ground, it's not a marking contest. If you're in a marking contest, you can accidentally elbow an opponent in the head, and
accidentally and deliberate are two completely different things.
Of course,
you know, and in the last couple of circumstances, neither of those, in my view, have been, you know, instances which, and whilst the opposition player has been hurt, have been done with the sort of malice that we want to be outlawed out of the game. So we need to get to a break. More coming your way, 133-882. Please join in if you'd like to have your say. Put your 5 cents worth in the melting pot. It is The Dig. You can gear up for winter with the biggest range of top brand gear at the Outdoor Toolkit Depot.
Sports Day, thanks to Kia. Kia EV6 and Sportage. Cars of the Year. And Toolkit Depot. Gear up for winter at Toolkit Depot.
Welcome back to Sports Day. Nice to have your company. 133-882 is our number. So COVID compliance, audits and sanctions, they have been conducted by the AFL. $100,000 fine's been dished out to the Sydney Swans, 50 of which has to be included in the 2022 or 2023 soft cap. $50,000 fine to Collingwood, Richmond with $25,000, and a reprimand for the Brisbane Lions and St Kilda. The other news today, Skeet, as we roll through a bit of that and get into our injuries for SKG Radiology, they care about your welfare, is a couple of greats, really. Shane Edwards, three-time premiership player at the Tigers, 301 games, no small effort there, 186 goals. His best was 29 in 2012. And Robbie Gray, arguably one of the best forwards, if not the best, to pull on the jumper for Port Adelaide, 270 games. He will get to play one more. There's a bit of an injury cloud over Shane Edwards as to whether he will play this weekend and be available for finals should Richmond end up in there. But 365 goals, his best season was 2017, where he booted 47.
Robbie Gray, an absolute gun, wasn't he? Set shot, crafty small forward, and when the game was on the line, he had ball in hand. Generally, it was in pretty safe hands, but outstanding performance. He finishes off in a showdown, so not a final, of course, reaching the prelim finals last year, but not this year. Port Adelaide bowing out at the end of round 23, but Robbie Gray, superb, and Shane Edwards, one of a handful of Tigers to get to 300 games, which is extraordinary. He turns 34 in October, so off the back of that, he's had a very good career. Probably not a flag to go out with, but he's had plenty of success in September, and he'll sail off into the sunset. A pretty contented man, I would have thought.
Keith just sent in a dig on the SMS skeet. He said, that lady who rang about Dermot is 100% right. He waffles on all game. It's the same on all games he is on. And we can't listen to 6PO overseas when the game starts. Great program, though, boys. Listen every night and Saturday mornings as well to Brad and the boys. Have a good day. So there you go.
He listens from overseas, is that right?
That's Keith. That's what...
Don't know whereabouts overseas he listens from, but anyway, good on you, Keith. Thanks for listening. And if you're overseas at the moment, there's a fair chance you're warmer than us at the moment because it's bloody cold in Perth.
Oh, mate, I was just thinking, like, I was speaking to a couple of my friends up in Broome today, and Millsy came back from Broome.
He has had the greatest road trip in the history of radio broadcasting.
And you know what happened, though? This morning he tested positive for COVID.
Oh, of course he did.
Yeah. So I said, oh, mate, there's all those people up in Broome. I knew there was people up in Broome when I was up there going around town that weren't putting themselves in isolation and quarantine. There's a few naughty people running around it still in our community, not caring about their elders. Like Millsy, anyways, he's shacked up at home. So Millsy, hope you get well, mate.
And the dish is looking after him. Fair dinkum, he's got a good life, Millsy.
Yeah,
he just timed his run to perfection to get to Broome for the Broome Cup. Is that right?
Well, how's that? So he gets up there, he gets through the whole road trip, and then he comes back to work in the city in the cold, and now he's got COVID, so he's got a week off.
Oh dear,
he just needed a rest. But no, that's true. So Millsy, we do wish you a speedy recovery.
Indeed.
Now let's get into our injury report. SKG Radiology care about your welfare and are now bulk billing Medicare rebatable services across all 20 locations.
Where do we start? We'll go to the Fremantle Dockers, given the importance of this week for them. Nat Fyfe, training tomorrow. Pretty important for him to get through that because, in essence, he may well be a target in attack, one of their real targets in attack against the Giants this Saturday in Canberra. Speaking of weather, I think it's going to be 1 degree as a minimum on Friday night and -2 on Saturday night. So it's going to be pretty cold. It's a day game, thankfully. But Fyfe set to play against the Giants. Nathan Wilson, H&S protocol, so he's listed as a test. Joel Hamling with a test, a calf as well, but don't think we'll see him. Josh Tracy's got an illness. It's a viral-related illness, but nothing COVID-related, we're told. Matt Tabernard with the calf, not expected to play. And the other big watch is Rory Lobb with that chest, shoulder. He is a test as well. If he doesn't play, Carl, who's the tall target for the Dockers?
Well, I think it's basically left up to Logue.
Well, how about this? How about Lloyd Meek comes into the side, potentially, as a ruck option, and Sean Darcy's been as good as anyone.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, the couple of marks that he took forward were exceptional, and, yeah, he's certainly got the ability to go there. Jai Amos, you wouldn't have thought after one game they wouldn't have thrusted the youngster back in there, but, you know, they mightn't have any choice if Tabana's not available, and, you know, we've seen Amos step up to the plate previously and look pretty good there, but that Meek suggestion isn't a bad one.
Yeah, SKG Radiology at the West Coast Eagles for what it's worth. The Cats this weekend. Nick Natt, as we know, has been battling with that knee. He's a test. Andrew Gaff also under an injury cloud as well, whether he plays this weekend amongst those. Look, they've got a heap of inactive and they've put a lot of players away for the rest of the season for obvious reasons. So just the question now of how many star Cats play on the weekend. We know that Dree Stanley is out. He injured himself against the Gold Coast Suns to Jeremy Cameron, but it could be a pretty ugly margin down there at the Cattery, depending, of course, on how good aside Geelong puts out there.
Yeah, and look, Jordan DeGoey's a test, Adam Chera's a test. I mean, these are key players for contests like that.
What about the Bont?
Well, the Bont is under an injury cloud, but his name is not on. He's not under a test or anything, but the reports are that he's a little bit sore. Same for Andrew Gaff. Reports I got yesterday is that he was limping around like anything at training.
He does that a bit. I've been at training.
He's not on the list.
He tends just to...
Don't be surprised. All I'm saying
is, if he doesn't play, I'm not surprised about any player not playing for the Eagles on Saturday. I mean, if they've got any ailment, well, I've got no reason to jump on a plane. And as you say, anything wrong with any Cat, you just put them in cotton wool just for that week.
Look, and look, just going back to your Freo question, I think if Nathan Fyfe's ready, Nathan Fyfe plays because he needs to get some footy under his belt and he's better to break down in a game like this than break down in a week's time. And he becomes another really good option forward as well, doesn't he? I mean, seriously, like, he doesn't really need to be that big bull in the midfield, because Freo's midfield have been going along pretty well without him, but he would certainly create, given his marking ability, that other option up in the forward line. So he and Lowe could make do, I reckon, as, you know, as those, you know, they're the same size as Jack Darling, for example, so there's no reason why they can't provide that sort of output.
True, although I'm not convinced Griffin Logue is a goal-kicking forward. I think he's a very good competitor. I'm just not sure you can
get bags out of him. Is that what you mean?
Totally, 100%.
Right. Let's go to Donnie. Hello, mate.
Good evening, boys. Hey, Geelong can rest half a team, and the Eagles probably start playing tomorrow. They'll probably still win. But anyway, not to worry. I mean, it was one of those years, and let's move on. A couple of things, boys. Well, the drums are beating about Rioli off to Richmond. Okay, if that's the case, surely we'll pick up a first-round draft pick. And the second one, Eagles wouldn't have to go too far to look for the ruckman. I mean, Lloyd Meek, he can't get going with the Dockers. If Jackson's coming in, he's not going to get a game anyway, ahead of Darcy and Jackson. I mean, I've seen him play a few waffle games and those few games for the Dockers. I mean, he's not out of place, is he?
No, good point. I reckon you're right, Donnie. I mean, look, whether that could ever happen, that Lloyd Meek goes from Fremantle to West Coast, I think he'd be a very sound pickup for the Eagles, given the lack of certainty with regards to Nick Natanui's knees, his health. He just hasn't been able to get himself right. He probably needs to... Yeah, the talk is get himself a little leaner. I think that's a fair call, don't you think, Carl, from what we've seen? Yeah, needs to get himself more mobile. Now, whether that mobility or lack of it is because of his knees or because he might have a couple of Ks extra than he'd like is up to him and obviously the medicos at, or the strength and conditioning at West Coast. But I don't think Lloyd Meek would look out of place in West Coast squad whatsoever. And go back to Willie Rioli. First round pick, he's 27. Is he a first-round pick?
No.
No, I didn't think so.
No, I mean, he wasn't a first-round pick when he came to West Coast.
No.
So I don't know that the Tigers would be giving up that. And the other bloke who I would have a crack at from a rucking perspective is Kieran Strawn, who's running around for Adelaide in the Sandful. He's been getting a fair bit of the footy, but he certainly can do his fair share in the ruck. He's a big man. He's 26. He's more mature. And I reckon that would be someone that I'd be having a crack at.
Does Jai Cully stay in the squad, on the list for 2023?
Yeah, I think that's already been confirmed. If not, it won't be long before it's confirmed. It's 14 minutes to 7, 133882. If you'd like to join in. Thanks to the Dardanup Butchering Company's Valley Spring Lamb, available at WA's best restaurants, hotels and cafes. What's hot for you? Back soon.
Sports Day, thanks to Kia. Kia EV6 and Sportage, cars of the year. And Toolkit Depot. Gear up for winter at Toolkit Depot.
Just repeating the news, thanks to Polaris, Australia's number one for making Polaris the number one selling side-by-side brand 21 years in a row. If you've just joined us, GWS have been presented by Adam Uzay, very impressively too. So he sounds like he might be the number one for the job right now. Adam Kingsley's still in the hunt, so too is Mark McVeigh, their current coach. But Alistair Clarkson has ruled out going to GWS and he is mulling up the opportunity at Essendon. And some further reports tonight by Mark Robinson that apparently that even though Clarko's management has said, well, they want to extend the deadline, they've basically asked for an answer in the next 24 hours as to whether he's going to North Melbourne or he's not.
Yeah, lots of hype around Clarko, but I guess if you're going to look at one coach who's come out of nowhere, when I say nowhere, like an assistant coach scenario, then he's doing pretty well. Craig McRae's got Collingwood buzzing, and most thought they'd be floundering. 133882. Let's go to Jack in Mosman Park. Hi, Jack.
How you going, fellas?
We're good.
That's good. I just want to have a yarn about Robbie Gray. Well said before, and a bit sad about his retirement. I'm obviously a Port supporter. He's battled testicular cancer as well. It's just sad that he couldn't walk away with a flag. He would have racked up 300 games, though, if he didn't have to battle the illness. But, yeah, hats off to him. He's definitely one of my favourite players. Very, very great bloke.
Where do you put him, Jack, being a Port fan? Where do you put him in the... in the list of, say, top 10 at Port, does he get a Guernsey?
Yeah. Well, if you go Port Adelaide and Magpies, he would still be in the top 10, I reckon. Just by the bloke he is and just how clever he is as well. Of course, he had that knee injury as well that put him out for a season, and obviously he battled his other illness, which is, yeah. He hasn't had a good trot, but he's bounced back every time, you know, and he's, I'm very proud of him, you know, as a supporter.
Yeah, well, we are as football people, mate. He's been absolutely magnificent, and he has got the accolades he deserves. He's a four-time All-Australian, so being picked in that team is no mean feat. He's a three-time fairest and best winner at the club, the John Cale Medal. He won it in 14, 15 and 16, going back to back to back. That's when he was in really top-class ripping form. Leading goal kicker 2011 and 2018, 7 years apart. So, you know, just to have that impact for the amount of time and to play that number of games, Skeet, to get to 271 games, which is what he's going to play on the weekend, is just a testament to his resilience.
And as I mentioned earlier, he is a bit of an iceman when it came to getting his team across the line. Will Heater, our producers, come up with this stat that 10 times Robbie got the power into the lead in the fourth quarter, and essentially they got the victory from there. So he was a player, you love the ball in his hands, a bit like Gary Buchanan, not the same type of player, but the same sort of skills. Trust with ball in hand, shooting for goal. Robbie Gray in the same category.
Yeah, he's been unbelievably good. Just in the other news, Cam Smith has withdrawn from the BMW Championship. No, not because of Liv. I know you're screwing up your face. No, he's got a sore back.
It's because of the wallets or the, he's got the backpack with all the cash in there, is he?
No. He actually does have a sore back, and so he's not going to play in the tournament starting the BMW Championship on Thursday. He still wants to finish top of the FedEx Cup. He's currently in third place. He's about 1,000 points off the top. So he wants to try and finish the number one in the world. And if he does, he'll get about $106 million before he jumps to Liv.
Yeah, I did tell you that a couple of weeks ago. It wasn't my information. It was someone who told me. Does his defection to Liv, do Australians fall out of love with him a bit? Or do you think, good luck, take the money and run?
I don't think anyone would begrudge these guys taking an opportunity. I'm not so sure that most people really care that much, do they? They just want to see the best play, and if it means they can tune in and watch him playing three rounds instead of four, does it make much difference?
Let's just hope they all come together, the golfers and both the PGA and Liv, find a happy medium, because at the moment it's very splintered.
And Adam, Ian Chappell, hung up the microphone today after 45 years of commentary, so we might try and get him on if we can and have a yak to him about what the future looks like. Back soon.
Sports Day, thanks to Kia. Kia EV6 and Sportage, cars of the year. And Toolkit Depot. Gear up for winter at Toolkit Depot.
Welcome back to Sports Day. Fantastic to have, thanks to Elders Insurance, from local football to community events. It's our way of giving back, and we head to the Greater Western Sydney Giants. And Adam Kennedy joins us here on Sports Day. Adam, welcome, mate. How are you going?
Hey, Mark. Carl, how are you going?
We are going really well, mate. You're looking forward to getting up to Manuka, mate. So it's going to be a bit chilly, I think. 11:45 Western Standard Time. That match is going to get underway on the weekend.
Yeah, it's always good getting down there. We've got the Giants faithful down there. They always come along and support in good numbers. So hopefully we can finish the season off in style.
When it comes to playing party poopers, you're quite happy to spoil Fremantle's quest to finish top four this season on the radar, just to shape the eight, as they say?
Yeah, they're obviously playing for a lot more than we are, but at the same time, even sort of similar to the Dogs last week, we didn't quite get there, but at least, people will be watching our game, because we do make a difference to that top four, top eight, and how it's going to end up. So it gives us something to play for a little bit, and hopefully we can make it a little bit tricky for them.
How do you reflect on the last couple of weeks? As you said, just fell a kick short against the Bulldogs, and then Essendon prior to that, you were very good. So some nice momentum, hopefully, to build for 2023.
Yeah, we had a pretty pretty honest week after the Sydney game, where, there was a lot of discussion, open discussion between coaches, players, just where we're at. We're really disappointed with that result, and a few before that as well. So, we thought we could either you know, go on and finish the season like that and be really disappointing, or we can make the most of, you know, the last three or so weeks and get something out of it, whether it's, you know, a few young players playing or just a few boys getting form back and, you know, taking a little bit of momentum, I know it's a little bit cliche, but into the pre-season and, you know we can take it up to these teams that are in the eighth at the moment.
Now, Adam, my co-commentator here, Mark Reddings, has been getting into me because I had you blokes in the top four at the start of the season, mate, and unfortunately you're down in the wrong end of the table right at the moment. What do you reckon at the start? Because obviously at the start of the year I look at your list and I see the talent and most of the talent's been available. I know you've been up and down in some cases when it comes to losing players and getting players back, which every club goes through. But what do you reckon went wrong early in the season?
Well, I don't know, maybe hold that thought for 2023, because we still definitely believe that, you know, we've got the list and talent to, you know, take us up into the top eight, top four for next year. So we're confident we can turn it around, but it's not going to happen without, you know, changing a few things and, you know, putting in the hard work over the summer. So we were just coming into the season, we were still as confident as ever, whether that was a confidence thing after, you know, not getting results early on, or I'm not really too sure what it was, but it's definitely been a season where we've taken a lot of learnings from it, and, you know, and hopefully it can hold us in a pretty good state for next year, and you know, we can climb back up that ladder.
Talking with Adam Kennedy from the Giants ahead of their big showdown with the Dockers on Saturday. You talk about change, Adam. Well, the coach, that may well be the change that is capturing a lot of attention over the next few weeks. As a player, how much attention? It sounds like Alistair Clarkson is out of the mix, but there would be a few people that think they can do some really good work with your group.
Yeah, well, to be honest, as players, we're not... maybe the leaders might be different, but we're not really hearing too much about it. We know that, you know, there's a process to go through, and, you know, and that's what, you know, Dave Matthews and the likes are going through. And all I know is sort of what Mark's doing at the moment, and he's doing a great job in, you know, in trying to freshen things up and, you know, and change a few things in his own way to, you know, sort of spark up the boys for these last few weeks, which he's been doing pretty well, I think. So, I probably know as much as you guys and a few of the names that are sort of floating up. So, you know, I'm sure the club will get it right, and, you know, we'll probably have an announcement hopefully soon.
What's James Hurd's role at the club at the moment?
All year he's been touching base, more so with the leaders, and working closely, with the likes of, especially the three captains and you know, the broader leadership group. And then game day, he, you know, pretty much comes in, touches base, he sits in the coach. I'm guessing sort of mentors Mark a little bit, but also just lets him do his own thing. For me personally, he's really good about just talking about, you know, the individual's game and sort of challenges each player about, you know, what they want to work on, especially in the last month, and what they want to get out of it, and sort of keeps you honest in that regard. So he's been really good. Can't speak for all the boys, but for me individually, you know, just working on my game and trying to improve it.
Adam, the other big statement I made at the start of the season, on top of you guys finishing in the top four, was that Tom Green will win a Brownlow medal. What do you reckon? Do you reckon he's good enough?
Yeah, I do think he's good enough. I've seen enough of you know, some of his good games, and yeah, he's got something special about him, Greeno. He's one of those big-bodied mids. I know at you know, trainings, when we're doing little match simulations, he bullies me around a little bit. So I know I'm not as big as some of the other mids out there, but he's got something special. I think he'll just keep growing with confidence. I think a lot of people forget I'm not sure what year he's in, but he's still pretty.
He's
pretty
21,
broad,
mate. So, he's only 21.
Yeah, exactly right. He's sort of talked about as if, which is sort of credit to him, because that's just how highly people are holding him at the moment. But he's still learning a lot about his own game, and I think he's shown throughout the year that, you know, he can change a game off his own boots. So he'll be really exciting going forward.
Now, how is Harry Himmelberg enjoying his switch, mate? Because we've seen him go from the start of the year to being one of your key forwards. In fact, I reckon he was leading your goal kicking. And then you put him down back and his footwork from in defence was one of the features of his game. And, you know, last week, another 30 disposals. He's getting hold of plenty of the footy and even getting forward and kicking a goal as well when he has to.
Yeah, as good as it is, it's a bit disappointing because I'd always tell him how hard he is as a defender, and he's come back, and I don't know if I've got within about 20 disposals of him all year in the game. So he's doing really well. He just reads the play really well. You know, he's pretty confident back there, and as you said, he's got a super leg on him, so he's really dangerous with the ball. So we try and get in his hands. I don't know what will happen sort of going forward, but it's always good to have that guy that can go forward, go down back, and, you know, even at times this year he's pinched it in the ruck, so he's a pretty handy player.
Speaking of the ruck, how do you stop Sean Darcy this weekend? He's a reigning Glendinning Allan medalist. He was outstanding against the Eagles. It was a bit of a slog over here in the West, so hoping from your perspective that they're a bit fatigued and a bit banged up.
Yeah, I saw there was a pretty tough match over there last week, so... Yeah, it'd be nice for them to be a little bit sore and put it, you know, hopefully they put a lot of energy into that game. But I'm sure they'll come ready with everything they've got to play for this week. As a Darcy, yeah, he's just a really, really good player. So it's a great challenge for whoever be rucking for us this week, probably Briggs. So he's a young up-and-coming ruckman. So you know, he's been really good at stepping up when he's had these big duels against the key rucks of the competition. So that's one that's really exciting for him, and, you know, you can sort of see where he's at.
Finally, Adam, realities are this weekend will be the last time this group plays together. Of course, across the league that happens, but talk of Tim Taranto moving on and other players potentially moving to Melbourne, etc. It's a chance to go out in style if that's the case, because we know lists change year on year.
Yeah, exactly right. I think every club goes through sort of this sort of thing. Hopefully, you know, hopefully a lot of the boys, you know, do want to stay and stick around, because there are exciting things to come at the Giants. And I'm pretty confident in that. I know that, you know, sort of the names get floated around, and I sort of sit back and I'm like, yeah, it's a little bit surprising, because you see, you know, how much they do love the club. So, you know, I'm pretty optimistic that, you know, a lot of those results of the trade period will go our way, because I think we've got good culture at the club, and I think everyone is really excited going into 2023.
Thank you very much for chatting to us tonight, mate. It's been a privilege having you on our show, and we'll see you in action on the weekend. Take care.
No worries. Thanks, guys.
Game 149 will be two, Skeet, on the weekend for Adam Kennedy. So one shy of his 150th game. I think he got concussed a couple of weeks ago, so he would probably be edging across that milestone if he didn't miss that game.
Yeah, he speaks really well. And the Giants, let's be honest, this is a game that is far from a done deal for the Dockers. They've got to travel to the other side of the country. The Giants beating Essendon, coming close to the Bulldogs in Canberra. This is, as I say, a banana peel possibility for Freo.
We need to clear a commitment. On the other side, we're going to come back and have a chat to Aaron Zalewski, who is back in town. I believe the Cookout Borough's co-captain and gold medalist from the Birmingham Commonwealth Games. Thanks to Elders Insurance, hands-on support for our local community. We'll be back soon.
Sports Day, thanks to Kia. Kia EV6 and Sportage, cars of the year. And Toolkit Depot. Gear up for winter at Toolkit Depot.
Welcome back to Sports Day. Thanks to Repco Authorised Service. For expert car service, you book online at repcoservice.com. And it's fantastic to have Aaron Zalewski back in town. We've been able to track him down. He's down, I believe, in Margaret River, enjoying some relaxation time, which would be nice. So, Aaron, I'm sure on the back of a very, very successful Birmingham Commonwealth Games. Welcome to Sports Day, mate. How are you going?
Thanks, gents. Yeah, going really good, and much needed R&R down home in Margaret River after pretty hectic tournament and then a few hectic days afterwards as well.
Aaron, how do you look back on the Comm Games? Almost a faultless performance by your team through the tournament. It must have been so satisfying to get the result the way you did.
Yeah, I look back on it pretty fondly right now. I think the way that the boys were able to finish the tournament winning 7-0 was, it was really special. And I guess we could probably enjoy that game. We had a few challenges, though, and just acknowledge that, like, tournaments aren't easy to win as much as 7-0 makes it look like they are. But, I mean, England really challenged us in the semi, and I think South Africa kind of stifled our flow a bit in their round games. And you're always battling with, you know, personnel and form and, good team harmony. So there were some challenges throughout there, and very proud that we were able to kind of show some resilience, get over those humps and come away with a great win on finals day.
And so you've achieved everything in the sport at the moment when it comes to at the top level. What's the next challenge for the Kookaburras now?
I think probably one of the biggest challenges for us is just staying and competing really well. I mean, you want to sustain success as a team. So we have won a few tournaments, but the majors are the bucket list item that we have to tick. I mean, this group hasn't won a World Cup yet or an Olympic Games, as though we went very close in Tokyo, but there's still a couple of things we need to tick off that list and just continue to keep improving, keep growing, keep building our depth as a squad, and hopefully that'll help us on our quest.
How much time down do you have in terms of giving yourself a breather? Because hockey's a demanding sport. You train awfully hard. What is the off period for someone like yourself, Aaron?
Yeah, it's pretty individually focused. I'm obviously back here in Australia. Some guys have gone off to play professionally in Europe. Other guys have on holidays in Europe and getting to lap up that European sun. But I'm just back here in Perth, so I'll probably have a couple of weeks off. I know my club team, Older Quinians, are in the finals race here, so I'm pretty keen to jump on board and help them out because they were great supporters of me early in my career. And then we've got the national titles coming up, the Hockey One League. So, I mean, it's not much break. I'll have a couple of weeks, and then I probably won't have as a heavy as load as I usually would leading into something like the Comm Games, but I'll have, two or three sessions a week, which is more than manageable for us, considering we usually train about seven times a week.
Just back to the opportunity to go and earn some good dollars, I believe, over there in Belgium and Holland. Was that something that you ever thought about doing, or was it always your intention to head back home?
Yeah, it's always on my radar. I think if you ever have an opportunity to go and play hockey overseas and experience some different cultures and earn some money, I think it's a great experience. I did it after the Olympics in 2016, and I signed again in 2020. So I have done it before and loved it. Had a great time. At the moment, I'm tied up. I've got just started a new job at the start of the year, and my wife's here back in Perth, started her own business. So things are busy on the home front. So we're just here consolidating before maybe that opportunity comes up again in a few years' time.
All right. Now, no pressure, but Australia have now won all seven gold medals in men's hockey since the sport was introduced to the Commonwealth Games back in 1998. We return to Australia next in Victoria, mate. I'm sure that you'll be trying to hang around and have another swing then, won't you, or not?
I'd like to say yes, but I guess we'll have to see what happens. And it's a grave responsibility now that we've won seven in a row.
Yeah, well, that's right. But, I mean, records are made to be broken. But I think that whilst you are establishing a legend, then there's no reason why you wouldn't want to have the desire to continue on. And I know from speaking to your coach throughout the tournament, Colin Batch, he was very high in praise for you, particularly when you put a couple in the back of the net.
Yeah, I think it's always nice to get forward. I play a bit of a defensive holding role, and whenever I can sneak forward and someone can maybe hold my position for me, I'll take full advantage of that and get forward. But yeah, I'll take things as they come. We've got such a busy calendar and busy schedule, but really enjoying being back on tour and travelling and playing and competing again, because we missed that so much, and that was a real challenge of, the period that we had in Australia for the last couple of years, just not having that competition. Fully excited for the next kind of 6 to 12 months with the World Cup and Pro League coming up and all sorts of events on the calendar for the hockey boys.
No question about that. Some of your elder statesmen, any word as to whether they are going to push through until, well, at least Paris you'd expect, and then potentially Victoria for the Comm Games, but is it going to be touch and go for one or two players?
I think most of the boys have made a fair commitment to hang around until Paris at least. I know Eddie, the four-time Commonwealth Games and four-time Olympian, is pushing 35 now, but I think he's still got a bit of run in his legs. And who else we got? Charter, who's in goals, shouldn't be a problem. And Weddy's still a spring chicken. You would expect him to only be about 25, and he tells you he's 31. So There is a few older guys getting around, but I think the usefulness of the team keeps us on our toes enough to keep pushing through for another few years.
And Colin Batch just seems like one of those coaches that, unassuming, obviously he's got a competitive streak in him that is required at this level, but he's someone that you'd be more than happy to see you through until, well, at least the Olympics and then beyond.
Yeah, he's a pretty good off-roader, Colin, and we've had the pleasure of working under him for the best part of 6 years now, and he certainly has a steely determination when you get to know him, and gets, you know, the best out of the boys and keeps challenging us to improve and get better and challenge each other. And, he's a good operator. And so is the other staff. We've got, you know, a great bunch of staff there under him that need to also do a great job and really push the boundaries of, you know, what we can do.
So from here, you then head next where? When do you actually return back to training?
Well, we probably won't return to training as a group until September. Well, the guys that are here in Perth, some guys might head home for a break, and then we don't really prepare internationally until the 30th of October. So quite a break away from the national program, and then we'll start getting ready for World Cup pretty much from then on. So that's our block of three and a half months as we lead into kind of what is, you know, one of the biggest tournaments on the hockey calendar. Only happens every 4 years.
Beautiful, mate. Well, thank you very much for sharing a few minutes with us tonight here on Sports Day. Take care and all the best for the future.
Thanks, gents. Thanks for the chat. Appreciate it.
Aaron Zalewski, of course, joining us there. Looking forward to seeing how that continues. So just updating some other sport. If you haven't heard the news, Zane Cordy's charge was thrown out at the tribunal tonight. No surprise there.
Was it a charge or was it just referred to by
no
the
charge.
Metro View officer
it,
to
it
say?
It was sent there for determination. So yeah. There was no charge.
That's a very bizarre set of circumstances.
It is. But anyway, we did speak about that off the top of the show, so if you haven't joined in, Shane Edwards also has retired today. Robbie Gray's retired today. A couple of greats of the game. Shane Edwards, too, was listed or is listed on the injury list, as you would have heard in the first hour if you were with us, for the Richmond Footy Club. So there's no guarantee he plays this weekend, but Robbie Gray will play his 271st and last game. And Ian Chappell, after 45 years commentating behind the microphone at 78 years of age, has decided to play the pin. As we clear a commitment, come back. On the other side, we'll have a chat to Craig Gabriel, the Nine Radio tennis correspondent. There's plenty happening in the world of tennis. Serena Williams to play tonight as well. We'll have a chat about her and the rest of the stories bubbling around next here on Sports Day.
Sports Day, thanks to Kia. Kia EV6 and Sportage, cars of the year. And Toolkit Depot. Gear up for winter at Toolkit Depot.
Welcome back to Sports Day. Fantastic to have our Nine Radio tennis correspondent in advance of heading to the US too for the US Open, which gets underway on the 29th of August. Craig Gabriel is the man I'm talking about, and he joins us. Welcome, Craig.
Hello, gentlemen. Good to be with you after a while.
Yeah. Look, it's nice to chat, and I thought you may have already been in the US getting into a few of these lead-up tournaments, but no, not yet.
No, I'm definitely keeping tabs on what's going on. It was a great run that both Nick and Alex Dumino and Kyrgios have had over the last couple of weeks. But, you know, you do need to get home every so often. And had I continued on after Wimbledon, I then wouldn't be coming back to Sydney probably till the end of September.
So with a couple of weeks to go before the US Open, we can jump onto some maybe not so much peripheral, but other issues in tennis. Now, Nick Kyrgios playing some really good tennis, as we know. He's come to the defence of Daniil Medvedev, who has received some unsavoury treatment from fans.
And I totally, wholeheartedly endorse what Nick said. I can't even call the person a fan, because they're not fans. After Medvedev lost to Kyrgios in Washington, he was leaving the grounds, and somebody from this, you know, the lineup on either side where the players go pass through, shouted out "loser," and that's just not on. This is pretty bad, and Nick jumped to his defense, and rightly so. I think I tweeted before that match started, I said, this is one I'm looking forward to because it's got two of my faves. I really, obviously, we all know, I really like Nick and I really like Daniil as well. Lovely guy, very funny, and what a player. So, you know, it was just pretty poor on this person's part.
The politics is playing out, though, isn't it? We've seen a Ukrainian flag draped over a local lady's shoulders whilst watching a couple of the Russian tennis players. One of the Russian players has complained. The on-court umpire has then asked this woman to leave. She wasn't doing anything wrong. Other fans came to her aid. We are going to, unfortunately, see a little bit of this continue to play out, though, given, you know, the situation that is continuing to unfold between Ukraine and Russia, of course.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's very sad, obviously, with what's going on over there. But I guess these people feel it's the only way they can get their message across as far as, you know, how they feel about the situation, which nobody agrees with, obviously. But these are individual athletes. Most of them don't even live in Russia. I mean, Medvedev is in Monte Carlo. That's where his base is. That's where his home is. You know, so I find it sad taking it out on the players because they've really got nothing to do with the war. And they've also come out and made plenty of statements over the last 8 months or so. You know, denouncing what's been happening. Plus, they're having to play in a neutral situation. Their national flag is not put in after their name, nor is the three-letter code of their country put in after their names.
US Open, Serena Williams is the big story. What, 40 years of age? I saw a really fascinating documentary. It might be old, but I still enjoyed it nonetheless. Jimmy Connors, at the age of 39, you'll know this very well, 1991, he reached the semi-finals at the US Open. It was an extraordinary run. He's coming back from injury at that stage. Could we see something akin to what Jimmy did all those years ago?
Or even what Kenny Rosewall did in 1974 when he reached the final at the age of, I think he was 41. Mm. Lost to Jimmy Connors in that final quite devastatingly. Can Serena do it? I'd love to see it happen, but I don't believe that it will. She's barely played any matches in the last 12 months. I think she's won one, maybe two matches in the last 12 months and in like first or second rounds only. So, you know, you have to have those matches under your belt. And she certainly hasn't. And as great as an athlete and player as she is, a lot of these girls, you know, haven't played her before and they're not scared anymore.
Mm, exactly.
Serena, it's going to be interesting to see what happens in Cincinnati when Emma Raducanu plays Serena in the first round there.
Yep, Serena and Venus playing tonight. And look, the crowd's going to be a factor in New York. We know that. And while we've got you just briefly on that, you're going across the US Open, Craig. But where does it sit? Is it in your top couple or not? We asked you off air, so maybe we know what the answer is, which might lead to your slight chuffle there.
Yeah, look, off the four, you know, let me just say this. Each of the four majors are so different, and there's the atmosphere is different from one to the next. But probably if I had to rate the U.S. Open out of the four, I'd put it in fourth place. But the thing is, I have developed a liking for it compared to a number of years ago when I absolutely detested the event. It is a difficult event. There's no two ways about it. It's so far from the city center where most people stay. And if you get caught in one of those traffic jams, you could be 2 hours before you get back to the hotel or get to the venue. So it's not an easy tournament by any means. And, you know, the crowds are pretty raucous, but it is one heck of an experience to be at a night match at the US Open. I mean, every single player will say that.
Now, one thing we know is that Nick Kyrgios won't be part of our Davis Cup team, but we do know that Dimonou Kokkinakis, Ebden and Purcell have been in ripping form as a doubles pairing, and Alexei Poprin and Jason Kubler round out our six.
Yeah, exactly. Look, it doesn't surprise me about Nick. In fact, the other day, he had made a point two more tournaments. So that two more tournaments is Cincinnati and the US Open, and I tweeted that and said, doesn't look like he's going to be part of the Australian Davis Cup makeup for Hamburg next month. He's desperate to get home. His parents haven't been in the best of health, and he's been away for, I think he was counting, like 180, 190 days, and he just wants to get home. He hasn't even seen his new nephew. His brother, Christos, his partner, had a baby, and yeah, he wants to see George as well. So that's the reason.
Terrific, Craig. Well, thank you very much for joining us briefly here on this Tuesday night. It's been a pleasure having your company, and I suppose the next time we'll chat, it'll be in the US. So we look forward to having a chat to you down the track.
Sounds good. I'll talk to you then, okay?
Good on you. Craig Gabriel, our Nine Radio tennis correspondent, looking forward to the US Open getting underway on the 29th of August. Some big news today too, the Kooyong Classic announcing some 2023 signings. That tournament to be played January 10 to 12. Alex de Minaur, who is our number one ranked male at the moment, but you've got Carlos Alcaraz, who's the world number four, who's been confirmed as coming to that tournament. And well done to Maddie Inglis, who we've spoken to a few times here on Sports Day. She had a win last night at Vancouver. Isla Tomljanovic also had a win at Cincinnati. And tonight, as Skeet said, Nick Kyrgios in action. 2 a.m. tomorrow morning, Alex de Minaur and Thanasi Kokkinakis also part of that tournament in Cincinnati. As we clear a commitment here, thanks to Kia, Australia's most wanted, the Kia EV6 and Kia Sportage, the cars of the year. We'll have a chat to Gavin Migro. The Speedway has been confirmed, the calendar for the upcoming season, and also the Chariots of Fire up there in the Northern Territory this weekend. It's a big event, and Gav, I know, is heading that way. So we'll have a chat to him next.
Sports Day, thanks to Kia. Kia EV6 and Sportage, cars of the year. And Toolkit Depot. Gear up for winter at Toolkit Depot.
Welcome back to Sports Day, and the general manager of Speedway here in Western Australia would be pretty happy, I reckon, because it was only a week or so ago now that the calendar has been revealed, and everything will get underway on Saturday the 29th of October with the Powerpalooza, which is always a significant day because you get a taste of everything. Drag racing, speedway, burnouts and monster fireworks, Gav, all on the same day. How are you, mate?
Yeah, really good, Carl, Mark. Yeah, really excited. They're going to be a ripper season. Perhaps the best and best season, certainly for speedway in the 22-year history. So moving into our 23rd summer of speed. So, yeah, looking forward to it. It's going to be an absolute ripper.
Gav, before we touch on some of the big events over the summer, of which you're very excited about, I'm sure, you're going to jump on a plane and head to the Northern Territory for the Chariots of Thunder. Tell us about that, and it sounds like a bit of fun and a bit of heaven for those who love their motorsport like you.
Absolutely. It's a big sprint car event. They run an annual event up there every year at the Northline Speedway in Hidden Valley. It's amazing. The motorsport complex up there has got the V8 supercar track, the drag strip, got go-karts, the speedway, motocross, dirt, you know, mud bogs, all that sort of stuff, all in the same precinct. And it's basically in the middle, just outside the city. Like, it's right in the smack bang in the middle of the suburbs. So it's a great venue, and they do this big sprint car show, and there's something like 60 sprint cars going up there. There's 25 odd speed cars going up that are racing up there, and about 20 odd street stocks as well. So it promises to be a massive two weekends of racing, Friday night, Saturday night, both weekends. So and there's a huge WA contingent up there participating and spectating, and I'm going to be one of them.
Outstanding. Coming back to the local front, the Americans, even drivers from the East Coast, we know that there's been so many restrictions with COVID and hurdles put in your way. Can you give us an idea of whether we're going to get back to some normality this season, Gav?
Absolutely. So we've just confirmed, and we're just waiting for the teams to basically announce the names. We know who they are, obviously, but we've got one of the guys as guaranteed. We've got three sprint car drivers from America coming for our Speed Week period starting on Boxing Day. And Brock Zierfoss, who won at our Speed Week 2 years ago, he's one of the top World of Outlaw drivers in America. And he has confirmed he couldn't come last year due to COVID, but this year he's champing at the bit for that. And there's two other Americans that we have confirmed, and we're hoping to release those names at some stage this week once the teams have just locked in their finer details. But can guarantee that we have got three Americans. We've also got one of the top Australian sprint car drivers is going to run our Speed Week as well, and Robbie Farr for Jason Pride Motorsport. So can't wait to see all that stuff. I know even back to into December with the WA Sprint Car title and the John Day Speed Car Classic, we've got an American speed car driver coming as well. So we've got, you know, the borders are certainly seem to be opening, and just hopefully that we can just keep kicking goals with our great season. And at the end of this week too, our season memberships go on sale as well. So all that sort of stuff. I think the existing members get their email tomorrow, and then by the end of the week they're open to the public. So we're very excited.
Now, one thing that I don't think I've ever experienced before is a super speedway night on a Monday. You're going to be racing on January 2, the day after New Year's Day, of course, and that is where you'll have a part of USA and WA Speed Week. And was this something that you agonised over, or was it an easy decision to make?
Look, I think at that time of the year, most of, you know, a lot of Perth and a lot of the public are on holidays. You know, school holidays are on. People from the country are on holidays. They come to the city, you know, after their Christmas or during their Christmas New Year break. And with Speed Week, it sort of fit in perfectly. And I thought, you know, we should give it a go. It works for Big Bash, and it should work for Speedway. So, particularly because we've got such a strong American theme through that period. We're really confident that event will work and the patrons will get behind it, because even the night before, Carl and Mark Bunbury's going to run a race on New Year's Day with the Americans, part of Speed Week, and then the week after that, second, we all go to our basically city country track, if you like, which is the Allenbrook Speedway, which is usually a Sunday afternoon winter track, and they're going to run a Saturday night sprint car show there with the Americans as well, and we're really excited to be supporting the Allenbrook Speedway for that event. And then they'll go back to Bunbury and then come to the Motorplex on the 21st of January for the Elf Barbagallo Mr. Sprint Car Speed Week finale, featuring the late model nationals as well. So it's cool. And then after that, well, we all know the one that I'm really, really looking forward to is the Australian Sprint Car Championship Carnival, you know, commencing on the Wednesday night, the February 8th. So it's just going to be huge. I think, I was sort of hoping we'd get 40, 50 sprint cars, and I think we'll get every bit of that, because there's a lot of interest to come to Western Australia for that Australian Sprint Car Championship, being the 60th anniversary of that title. So it's pretty cool.
And that will be completed on the weekend of February 10 and 11, Friday the 10th and February the 11th. If you put those into your calendar, the grand final of Super Speedway is going to be the 22nd of April. And look, if we continue in the trajectory of what we saw last season, the numbers were up across the board, Gav. It was terrific to have big fields returning, particularly when it comes to, say, the speed car numbers that were dwindling a little bit. But across the board, it was great to see the numbers start to improve. I just hope we can keep up the momentum.
Absolutely. I mean, the sprint cars, the late models, the speed cars. I mean, we're very confident the numbers will continue to grow this year. And of course, the Formula 500s as well. They've got an Australian Championship in WA this year. And our late models are the best outside of North America. So, we're really excited by that. And the fans are really buying into it too, guys. You know, that's the cool thing about it. The racers are getting to race in front of good quality and high crowds for Speedway. So, thoroughly. Can't wait. It's going to be really exciting. Great season. Like I said, probably the best one in our history. So it should be a beauty.
Thanks for joining us, mate. Enjoy Darwin.
good on you guys. I'll have a little a sip of golden ale at tomorrow afternoon at the ski club for you.
Yeah, I'm sure you will, Gav. Good on you. Don't rub it in, mate. So we'll be here talking about having a quiet one. Thanks to the Toolkit Depot. Gear up this winter for the biggest range of top brand outdoor power gear at the Toolkit Depot. We will clear a commitment, come back. On the other side, we're going to have a chat to Kenny Pride. Johnny Slavich not with us today, but we'll do Green to Grain, thanks to Baron O'Day, because the little things are everything.
Sports Day, thanks to Kia. Kia EV6 and Sportage, cars of the year. And Toolkit Depot. Gear up for winter at Toolkit Depot.
Welcome back to Sports Day. Great to have your company. And we finish off with Green to Green, thanks to Baron O'Day, because the little things are everything. And Ken Pride, who is the Bowls WA CEO, that I'm sure is still celebrating on the back of Christina Kristic winning a gold medal at the Commonwealth Games. Kenny, great result, mate. Welcome.
Thanks, Carl. Yeah, absolutely. I think last time we spoke, we were thinking, you know, can we actually get a gold in the Northern Hemisphere? Never done that before in bowls. So, our own girl, Christina, the gap in the pairs, was something special indeed.
Is she back yet? Have you had a celebration? Will you have something to honour her if she returns in the short term?
Yeah, we will, Mark. We'll do it in concert with Manning, her club. She's actually having a nice break back in about a week or week and a half. Went back to Croatia, back to the family, and I'm sure she's flashing that gold medal around somewhere up there as we speak.
Very jealous, Croatia. This time of the year, I'm told it's absolutely magnificent. Closer to home, the Australian indoor singles. Tweed Heads, not a bad spot either. Can you tell us more about that?
Yeah, look, fantastic spot. You're right. One of the, probably the largest club, one of two in Australia. Certainly pour some money through that place. Australian indoors is on. Time-honoured event run by Bowls Australia. 64 men and 64 women, which you, in fact, have to qualify from individual state to play in it. Plenty of decent prize money. All the big boys up there. Aaron Wilson, of course, who of course now famous for ripping the gear off with winning his Commonwealth Games gold medal. He's up there playing at the moment. And just to show how the vagaries of sport, and particularly bowls, tumbled out in the first round. So you never quite know. You're a feather duster every now and then. But, yeah, big event up there. Last only WA person to win it, in fact. Carl, you'd know Dennis Katunarich.
Yep.
So the great Dennis won that back in 92. So long time between drinks between a WA person grabbing the Australian indoor.
And finally, Kenny, the Bowls WA race day at Belmont Park. It's getting closer by the day. Should be a ripper and lots of people hopefully getting along.
Yeah, a bit of fun, something a bit different. We caught up with the Racing WA, the Racing Perth guys, a couple of months ago and suggested, look, it might be a bad idea in our off-season to have a bit of a race day out there with the Bowls fraternity. So comes around this Saturday. Looking forward to it. Six of the races of the nine race card are named after bowlers or something about the Bowls community. The Christina Kristic Grabs Gold is one of the races. So looking forward to a really nice day out there at Belmont Park and get the Bowls fraternity around. Good afternoon on Saturday with a bit of luck.
Yeah, good luck, mate. Looking forward to that. Thank you very much for joining us tonight here on Sports Day.
All right, boys, not a problem.
Good on you. Ken Pride, who is the Bowls WA CEO. Thanks to Baron O'Day. Don't miss out on the little moments because the little things are everything. Now, that's all we've got time for. It's been a busy night. I'm sure it's going to continue to evolve there at Essendon after that board meeting today. Clarko's reportedly keen. We'll find out the big news on that tomorrow. But coming up straight after the 8 o'clock news that is fast approaching here on 882 6PR, it'll be Todd Johnston with the night shift. He'll take you right through until midnight. His number is the same as ours, 1-3-3-8-8-2. See you soon.